Welcome to Everything But The Tip, the podcast that bucks the trend of the mainstream golf content being churned out by the masses. Presented by the co-founders of Smart Golf and Fitness, we're on a mission to guide golfers towards genuine improvement. No swing tips, no shortcuts, we're anti-instant gratification. Join us as we navigate the complexities of the game, offering insights on how to truly excel in golf by embracing the challenges and breaking free from the usual quick fix mentality. All right, welcome back, everyone. I could not be more excited for today's episode. We have an absolutely fascinating guest lined up for you. He's a three-time world long drive champion, an expert coach, an increasing swing speed, and a good friend of mine, the one and only Fast Eddie Fernandez. Eddie, thanks for being here and coming all the way from Florida.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. It's crazy when I think about it. This whole journey started with you guys in 2013. November of 2013, I'll never forget about. We're going to talk about it, but I couldn't be more proud of you guys, what you've built here from, you know, Tommy's little probably 200 square foot gym that I started in Westmont to what you guys have built. It's absolutely amazing.
I appreciate that. And right back at you, man, we could not be more proud of you and everything that you've accomplished. Obviously we're all very thankful to the golf industry as a whole because it's been good to us, and to see all of us pursue our passion and have it ultimately create a return, you know,
yeah,
in a very positive way. It's really, really special. And I look forward to kind of, giving our listeners a little bit more insight on that entire journey.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
it's fun.
You know, my plan of attack today is just to kind of start at the beginning. I think you are the epitome of a success story, written through hard work, sacrifice, and failure, and an undeniable belief in oneself. Your journey is also a testament that age is just a number. Mm-hmm. And I want to dive right in. Eddie, obviously you weren't always in the spotlight. So let's start with your early days when we met. I think right around the waiting tables days.
Yeah, gosh.
And I'll give you the floor here.
Yes. Long story short, I played a lot of golf, went to Q school 5 times. Just missed making the finals.
What year was this?
It was 2004 was my last year.
Okay, so perspective, how old were you?
I was 33, almost 34.
Okay. Q school 5 times.
Okay. Made second stage twice, just missed making the finals. But I've won over 50 mini tour events, good solid player, always really long, probably got me in more trouble than anything. Maybe a little too overly aggressive. Maybe if I had decade golf back then, I would have probably played a little bit better. So,
have you met Scott?
I do. I know Scott very well. He's actually presenting at a seminar we're holding at Foxwoods Casino in Connecticut in October. So,
and his stuff's really good.
Yeah, and very interesting. Waiting tables kind of went through.
What was the name of the restaurant, by the way?
Viaggio.
Viaggio.
Viaggio, downtown Madison, in Chicago here downtown. But, it's kind of weird because I started playing golf and, married in 03, 3 kids, got in the business world after I played golf and just missed it in 04. And, it was a very interesting time in my life because, having a family, not playing golf anymore, getting into the business world. And, then opening up my own surveillance company in right before 08.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. So I had 2 offices, Orlando and Jacksonville, right before the crash of 08. So that was a tough time. Very, very tough time. So I think through all those experiences, I think that's what made me tough as nails, really, mentally, emotionally. I knew I had a family to take care of. Eileen was not working. With three kids under 3 and a half. So it was difficult. It was up to me to kind of, take care of the family. And it was, day by day. Sometimes it was hour by hour. And, when you look in your bank account and you see $1.37, it kicks you in the balls and be like, okay, I got to figure this out. So luckily, that was a great experience for me because I always wanted to be successful. I knew I was an athlete And then I saw the World Long Drive Championships in 2013.
How long had you been waiting tables at that point?
From 2010, I started at Ditka's, and then I went to Viaggio. And then I did it for about 5 years. And the money was great.
What was your involvement with golf during that period of time?
None.
Weren't playing at all. So you took a five-year hiatus.
I took basically a nine-year hiatus. Oh. I probably played 20 times in 9 years from 2004.
And that was, you didn't have a choice.
I had no choice. I could not play, it was so frustrating because 2004 I played awesome. I probably won 15 to 20 mini tour events. I won 7 in a row. Cruised through the first stage. You know, I was leading after 2 rounds, shot 66, 71 on a pretty tough golf course, and, you know, made it through. I think I finished tied for 9th, and they took 18 in ties. Second stage, I just wasn't as sharp, and, you know, everyone's really freaking good in this game. So you have to play well, especially in this day and age. We see 20-year-olds like Nick Dunlap and these 19, 20, 21-year-old kids coming out, finishing in the top 10, winning PGA Tour events. So it's a game to where you better be on, or else, you know, you're going to be doing something different for a living.
So how many years then were you in pursuit of saying, hey, I want to be a professional golfer? And how long did you give that?
Yeah, 92 to 04. So 92, I became an assistant pro in Connecticut. But I always had the mindset of being a player. I was always a player, a competitor. I loved competing. I always wanted the ball. And I'll get into that in a few minutes.
Which kind of differentiates yourself amongst a lot of the guys that you're competing against, in which even we had this talk prior to even getting started. You impress a lot of the players that are playing at a high level when you do get the opportunity to play with them. The fact that you're a well-rounded player, that's definitely a different path than most players of World Long Drive.
They are blown away when I hit a little flighted 137-yard 9-iron, controlling the flight, controlling the spin, controlling the distance, and they're like, you just hit one 375 and you're hitting that little shot, really? Like, how are you not on tour? Like, when I spent time with Phil Mickelson a year and a half ago, and I'm hitting these little buttercut 6-iron, little draws, and, you know, just hitting these little wedges and then ripping a driver at 202 ball speed, he's like, dude, seriously?
What are we missing here?
Yeah, seriously? Like, why aren't you dominating on the Champions Tour? And I'm like, hey, it's hard. I made the finals in 2021 on the Champions Tour Q School, and, you know, finishing the top five is difficult for anyone out of 97, 98 players. And it's you have to play great, and that's a tough tour, as we all know. That's probably the toughest tour in the world to qualify for. But
well, I was cool just going to say, like, your story is—it's all but too common for a lot of really good players, and that's another side of being a professional golfer that doesn't necessarily get a lot of light shed on it, right? People think PGA Tour, oh man, that must be a great lifestyle, getting paid millions of dollars to play golf, but it's like, well, if for any of the names that you've probably never heard of, it's a very, very different story. And yeah, I mean, it's really tough. And obviously your example is, for a lot of players that have tried to pursue and play professional golf, all but too familiar.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Thankful for you guys though.
Yeah. Let's get back to that. So how did you stumble upon us? So here you are, you took a long hiatus, you're waiting tables, you're dabbling in the security industry or surveillance industry. Mm-hmm. And what changed? Where did all of a sudden, I want to get back in golf?
Yeah, so I knew a little bit about long drive. Didn't really know much about it. I knew who Jason Zubak was, you know, multiple world champion. But that's really it. I didn't really know anyone else in the sport. I knew it was just about speed, power, you know, hitting it as far as you can, which I've always done. So I saw the World Championships. Tim Burke, who is now a friend of mine, I saw him in 2013, and the Final Eight was on ESPN, I believe, at the time at the Speedway in Vegas. I'm like, man, this is cool, right? This is right up my alley. So I was watching. Tim won that year, but I'm looking at the players, and the slowest guy was like 137, 138, 204, 205 ball speed. So I'm like, man, he doesn't look like he's swinging that fast. I mean, I have no idea I didn't even know what TrackMan was. So I knew they were using TrackMan. So I Googled TrackMan Chicago, and you guys came up. So I came in, got on with my old R7 driver that was 9 years old, and I got it up to 134 club, 196 ball speed.
And I was like,
standard length driver. And I was pretty impressed, actually. I haven't really done that much. And when I met with Tommy, he's like, yeah, you know, and you guys trained me for free. I was able to use your facility for free. Basically, you guys sponsored me to get ready to compete in long drive, because I think you guys saw something in me. Look, I'm going to do whatever it takes. I went through the whole thing. And once Eileen supported it, I was like, everybody get the F out of my way. This is who I am. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do whatever it takes to be successful. And I'd been through so much beaten. I'd been through a beaten, right? Financially, through to just life was just kicking the shit out of me. So I just said, you know what? This is what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I'll never forget sitting down at the table at Buckingham Athletic Club.
Yep.
And, you know, we had a group surrounding and you sat down and I'll never forget the look on your face. I mean, you could see it even in your eyes right now. You're like, I'm all in. This is what I'm going to do. I will prove it to you. And obviously you brought all of the tangibles and could clearly move that club. So we were just as excited selfishly about the opportunity, as much as you were appreciative of the opportunity.
Yeah, so appreciative. I knew what I brought to the table. Eileen did. She supported it. And I don't think many women would support a 43-year-old getting into long drive where it's winner take all. It was winner take all at the time in the open division. So I was way behind the eight ball, but I was able to train at your facility, you know, Tommy, with you guys, hit, practice however much I needed to, and then go to work, go run around a restaurant for 6 or 7 hours, then come back and do it all again the next day. So I did that.
Yeah, at that point, how many days a week were you working on it?
I was working at the restaurant 6 or 7 days a week,
right?
Just because I needed to.
But then on the actual sport of world long drive?
5 days a week.
Yes.
Yeah, five days a week.
And at this point, and maybe this is still the case, you were changing like your intake, your nutrition.
Everything.
Supplements. Everything.
I wanted to do everything. Yes. I took the bull by the horns and I said, I am going to leave no stone unturned. I am going to take this and I wanted, you know, these belts. I wanted to be number one in the world. I wanted to bet the best in the world. I wanted to be, I think, you know, cause I get asked all the time, you know, what's your legacy, right? And now I think about, I'm like, that's not really for me to kind of talk about, but I think if I were to look at me from the outside perspective, I think, you know, I was a hell of a competitor, you know, very consistent, a good golfer that's doing long drive. Mm-hmm. I think that's, I'm a player first and foremost. And then, you know, just with some, add a little speed to that. So that's kind of how I would characterize it.
No doubt. All right. First 12 months. Let's kind of share with the listeners kind of what it had unfolded and maybe talk to your first competitions and whether or not they were successful. And let's give them some insight to the journey here.
Yeah, first, you know, I joined Tommy and you in November of 2013. The first tournament I was going to compete in was March at the Desert Launch. I'll never forget it. And Tommy came out with me, got a little Airbnb, or at the time, whatever it was. They had a kitchen, so we went to Whole Foods and, you know, got, you know, all kinds of stuff. And in Mesquite, Nevada, which was the greatest grid in the world. It's like the Augusta of long drive. So we cooked, we ate, we got to the grid literally. Yeah.
What was your, fastest recorded swing speed going into this event? What'd you get up to in the first 12 months?
I think 142.
You had gotten up to 142.
Yeah. 141, 142, if I can remember correctly. Okay. I know it was over 140. So I would say 142, 210-ish.
At this point, speed. You're
43, 44, and then the next year in November 2014. So, yeah, so we get there, literally jumping out of my skin to compete. I couldn't wait. Haven't competed ever before, and then just we got to the grid like 2 hours early. There's no one there. It's like the sun's coming up. We went through our workout. And I was the first one on the box. There were two of us at a time. And it was a qualifier for the Sunday. This was a Friday. So I go up there and I pipe three of them. You know, a little downwind off the left. So I hit like 427, 428, and 436. 436 was the longest one I hit. So I'm like, I mean, I hit them pretty good. I know it's probably 208, 210 ball speed, somewhere around there. And, you know, I want to finish in second. So it qualified me for Sunday. So I had Saturday off and came to Sunday. I think I made it to like round 6 or 7 and I lost by like a yard or two. So I'm like, yeah, man, I can do this. Like, I knew some of the guys that were there. I didn't really know anyone, but, you know, I knew that they're looking, kind of Googling rankings and stuff, seeing how I knew some of these guys were really good. So I'm like, if I'm only a couple of yards or, you know, within 5 or 10 yards of these guys now, with I've only been in the sport for 4 months. So I knew that the future was going to be bright. I knew, and that's, I think, where we talk about belief. You know, you have to believe. If you don't believe in yourself, you might as well just do something else. Just because believing in what you do and how you do it is paramount to success. And, you know, like just to win a belt, right? I believed I could do it. I don't think you really buy in 100% until you actually do it. I mean, you know you can do it. You kind of fake it until you make it, sort of. So once I did it, it's like, okay, yeah, I can do this.
So that first year, although you didn't get as far as you would like, mm-hmm. that was still a very, very positive experience for yeah. you, because at that point, it was validation.
Absolutely.
It was, I 100% can do this.
Absolutely. Yeah. If I was getting smoked by 40 or 50, I'd be like, yeah, maybe this isn't for me. But I knew what my speeds were, and I knew what the guys were the year before at the final eight at the World Championships. So I'm like, yeah, it's just a process. And I gave myself two years to just build. I know if anyone knows, it doesn't happen overnight, it's me. So I put together a great plan with you guys, the training aspect. I just became better and better and better and better.
Yeah, it really is amazing. If you could, let's give some insight to your, well, first of all, before I get there, how many events had you competed in before you broke through?
Oh, 10 to 12. Here's the thing. So I won the regional in 2014. So, but it doesn't, I wouldn't constitute that as a win, but it was still, I beat a lot of really good players. I mean, there were, you know, 60, 70 guys at the regional in Florida when I went. I finished second in the local, and then I wound up tying for first at the regional with Steve Monroe, who'd made a Final Four, I believe, a couple of years prior to that. So I knew that I had the goods. So, but it was literally two or three events before a regional, but to actually win an actual event, it's about 10 or 12.
Wow. And over what time period were those 10 and 12?
2 years.
2 years.
Good 2 years.
Yep. What was the first paycheck?
First paycheck was, well, I made $800, which was kind of nice at at the regional, right? They actually paid people for winning regionals.
Finished was that your first ROI? Through.
That was my first ROI. Yeah. Yep. Wow. So I basically broke even. Travel. But my first paycheck was $2,400. And then, you know, I'm one of the very few probably in the history of the sports that's actually made money over the years in long.
That's true. Because, for sure.
You know, there's not a lot of payout for World Long Drive, unfortunately, but it's been pretty good.
So what year did you move out of Chicago to Florida?
2016.
It was, wow. So mm-hmm. that's been 8 years now.
Yeah.
Gosh,
it's nuts, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah.
And fast forwarding to your breakthrough,
mm-hmm.
your first one, right? How old are you now? And when you won?
I was 47.
47. When,
my first world championship, I was 47.
Now, was
almost
that,
48.
Was that, because there's two different divisions, right? There was?
Yeah, open and master's division. It was back then.
Okay, and what age is Masters?
45. 45
okay.
and up.
Okay, got it. So your first one was in the Masters division.
Yes, the World Championship. I won my first Open Division event, like actual tour event.
Yes.
That same year, 2018. So that was out in Huntington Beach. That was the Endless Summer Invitational. Yeah.
All right. So just for our listeners, what's the payout for that one?
I won 10 grand.
Okay.
I finished second 2 weeks before that at the East Coast Classic World Long Drive Tour event. Got beat by Justin Moose in the final by like 5 or 6 yards. And then I won the next one in California. So I had a really good 20. It's like my breakout year.
How far did you end up hitting it to win?
393 or something.
I know
like
it's
that.
Kind of a crapshoot question because you don't know where the wind is.
Yeah, for sure.
You don't know what the temperature is.
Yeah.
You know how the ball's rolling. So that's kind of.
Yeah, I was hitting it consistently in the 390s that day. I'm pretty sure it was in the 390s, if I can remember correctly. But Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Let's give some insight to your regimen, what it took to ultimately reach the level of success that you've had. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, you can share the listeners, what your PRs are now, what your fastest swing speed is, and what your longest ball ever hit is. And I want you to give a little bit, you know, your age around that, because obviously you started at 43, but your max swing speed came many years later.
Oh, yeah. So when I got into long drive, you know, the guys were over, the elite guys were over 220. And my goal when I got into long drive was to hit 225 ball speed. And this was end of 2013. So 225 ball speed is, you know, as moving it, you know, 200 ball speed is moving it, but 225.
Well, what's current world record right now?
245 now?
Yeah, like Berkshire, because he's
It's actually Sam Attanasio.
No kidding.
Berkshire is like 242.
Ooh.
He's put up 242.
What's this guy's name?
Sam Attanasio. He's a monster.
Can you put it on the grid?
Yeah, he hits a very low ball flight. But he's a good dude. Really, I like Sam. But he's just so fast, over 160 miles an hour. it's insane. But
all right, back to your regimen.
Yeah. So
goal was 225.
Yeah, goal was 225. It took me September of 2022 to hit it. So 8 years basically to hit my goal.
There had to have been moments in time where you plateaued for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And that you
even go backwards.
Did you ever make a definitive? Yeah, even go backwards. Yeah. Was there a point where like, okay, this is just not gonna happen? And what led to you to continue to believe that you were ultimately going to potentially get there?
I just, you know, I think will. Grit. I think grit is a really good word for me. I just developed a lot of grit over the years of the struggle and the this and that. And I just said I was never going to take my foot off the gas. Even if I never hit it, I would have been like, I did everything I possibly could to hit my goal.
So what I hear there, which is something we preach to our players and clients here, is through grit, you weren't going to give up.
Nope.
And they always say, if you don't give up, you can technically never fail.
Correct.
You know, I even said this line to you earlier, and we've said it on past podcasts. I always say, you know, what really separates the players that ultimately get better once they begin their journey, you know, in golf, most of our guys are just trying to get a little better at golf. But for the ones that don't get better are the ones that gave up. And they gave up because they weren't patient enough, right? And they weren't patient enough because their expectations never matched reality. But the key there is just, it's not giving up. And I love hearing you say that because it's like, I don't know if I was actually going to ever get there, but I knew I wasn't going to quit trying.
Right.
And so many people can learn from that. It took, you were 43 years old.
Yeah.
8 years later, you're 50, 51.
I was 51 at the time.
And what'd you end up hitting?
225 on the dot.
On the dot.
And then I hit 228 in December. Holy that was September. I got up to 226, 227. Then I hit 228 in December of that same year. Trying to hit 230.
Now, to this day, can you still hit 225?
Low 220s. Probably, I think my fastest couple weeks before Worlds a few weeks ago was 222.4, I think. So, but it's still, you know, 220, 220 plus, which is great for this ball that we're using in competition.
Well, that actually, now I have to follow up with that question. What kind of ball are you using in competition?
Bridgestone. Everyone uses the Bridgestone E9. It's a little softer. It's like 90 compression, so it's... You know, there's a threshold of the ball, just to, as you being a good player, as me being a good player, you know, it smushes a little bit. It gets over-compressed like, you know, some of these guys that are 224, 5, 6, 30. It just gets over-compressed, stays on the face too long. It's like the law of diminishing returns.
Makes sense.
It doesn't get back to round quick enough, so it kind of squirts. But I think 215, 218, and when I won, it was 215. The two balls I hit in the finals were just money.
Okay. 8 years. Mm. What did it take? What were you doing throughout the week? Was there a breakthrough, or is there something that you just processed differently? Was there a piece of information, technology, equipment, training aid, coach that – you felt, maybe even felt that if you would have had that earlier, you would have broken the speed goal even earlier in your career? Or is it just a culmination of everything? And what is that everything?
culmination of everything, recovery is massive. Getting enough sleep is, I underestimated that early. Just, you know, yeah, you work really hard and you do everything. You can't do that all the time. You start burning the candle at both ends and it just wears you out. You have to recover. Your body, especially getting older, you know, 49, 50, 52 years old, you have to recover. And I think what I learned was, especially from a nutrition standpoint, I always thought of myself doing long drive as a Ferrari. I'm not going to put crap or sludge in my body. I need to feed myself the best possible nutrition, whether it be grass-fed beef or steak, you know, wild-caught fish, organic chicken, you know, vegetables, salad, you know, whatever it is, all the good stuff. You know, I'm not going to put any junk in my system. You know, every once in a while, I'll go out and have pizza or whatever. But for the most part, it's I was very strict on that. I got as much sleep as I possibly could, enough recovery. You know, and just meditation has been huge. You know, 15 minutes a day just kind of settles you. Kobe Bryant used to do that. And just, it's everything, Joe. It really is. It's training. It's golf swing. It's understanding movement patterns. That's why the work I've done with Joe Lacaze, Dr. Joe, with Rotex has been huge. And just learning how the body moves. I never knew what I did. Like, I just did it. Innately, I just did it, which is pretty neat from an athletic standpoint. I always wanted to be athletic. So, but it's everything. It's
how many days a week are you working out?
4 days.
Okay. And what are you doing in the gym?
I'm not bench pressing. I'm not doing normal squats. I do a lot of pure motion stuff like Jeff Flagg. Mm-hmm. So I have a little setup in my garage. I'm also a member at a gym in Orlando and I'm a member at Athletic Motion Golf, AMG.
Do you still have a personal trainer?
Jeff. Okay. Yeah, I talk to Jeff.
Okay.
You know, he gives me certain workouts and I do that. And in literally 45 minutes, that's it. 45 minutes, 4 days a week. I do a lot of rotational stuff, the engine, the core. You know, I get that super, super strong stability of the lower half. And it's just, I've got a really good, we call it the recipe. I've got the recipe, you know, I know the recipe.
It's holistic,
for me.
It's all in.
It is. It's a culmination of everything. I've never been a huge drinker. I've never used drugs. So it's, you know, by treating my body like a temple, very, very important to compete at the highest level. You know, if you want to just compete and have some fun or do it as a hobby, then, you know, you could probably do some other stuff. But I wanted it to be great. I really wanted to be great. I wanted to win championships. I wanted to change the game and show people. I think I kind of found out what my purpose was after a few years. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I want to be 50, 60, 70 years old, still hitting at 400 yards. I want to prove to these guys. I'm sick and tired of you know, guys making up excuses, saying, oh, well, I'm getting older and this and that. That's bull. You know, I just, I don't take that. I don't like that very much. So I think if you have time to go out and drink at the bar, if you have time to do it, you can find 45 minutes, 4 days a week and train or go practice.
How bad do you want it?
Now, how bad do you want it at the end of the day? Most people don't. So
what year were you able to, well, first of all, I have one more question. So you've sleeping, recovery, diet, time in the gym. Mm-hmm. Okay. How about just time allocated to just increasing your speed? Mm-hmm. And what can you share with our listeners? What specifically, what you were doing to increase your speed? And you can go into detail. You can get a little technical on some of the movement patterns. Yeah. Share with us on that front.
Yeah. So from a swing speed perspective, I was, you know, swinging at air. And I really liked the concept of it at the time. 2017, I was doing it consistently a couple times a week.
And I share what that means, swinging at air.
So either speed sticks or stack systems, something like that. So, and I got every time I would do it after the session, and I would, you know, I'd be going full bore. I mean, it's, you know, when you're swinging those things, you're going full out. My wrists would be sore. My elbows would be sore. Even my shoulders sometimes would be sore. And all of a sudden, after probably 2 or 3 months of that, it just got, it seemed like it was consistently getting worse and worse and worse. I got tendonitis in both elbows. Never been injured before, really. Mm-hmm. So my body's trying to tell me something. And thankfully, I listen to my body. So then I talked to some physical therapists. I talked to a few doctors and orthopedic surgeons. And they're like, you know, the body really needs a bracing effect. So you need to hit something. It needs something at impact. And so I developed my own little, kind of did some trial and error. It took me a few years to kind of figure it out. And that's where that was born.
All right. I was going to wait to get there, but
no, that's okay.
Let's give it a shout out now.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about it. Well, first of all, let me have some follow-ups here. Yeah. So how long were you over speed training at air? Okay. Mm-hmm. Not hitting something.
Yeah.
Until you gave it up. And then within that period of time, were there positive gains? Mm-hmm. And then what is your overall feedback to individuals that are trying to swing speed that are currently using those overspeed systems?
Yeah. I think, I'm not saying you can't get faster. I got a little bit faster swinging those, but I look at that as empty speed. And what I mean by empty speed is, you know, I was swinging those really fast. I was like putting PRs up every couple of weeks. Like I was swinging those fast and then I'd go and then I'd like plateau. And then I might be half a mile an hour slower. I'm like, man, I'm like swinging those things faster. Why aren't I getting faster, you know, hitting balls? And I've gotten hundreds of people reaching out with that same story. Like, what is it? You know, how come I'm setting PRs with the stack or whatever, but I'm hitting it in this exact same spot on the golf course. So, and I just said, you know what? This thing is going to really take off. And I developed a product where you can actually hit balls, kind of like that overspeed overload.
So we're still at overspeed training, mm-hmm. which, by the way, I'm just going to educate the audience a little bit on what overspeed training is. The idea behind it is to swing an object faster than your brain is typically accustomed to, right? So mm-hmm. when we're swinging a normal driver and we're training, and let's just say for us regular folk out there swinging 100 to 110, well, if you're always training with that particular weight, mm-hmm. well, it's going to be really tough to overcome your plateau. Yep. So the premise behind it was started by a guy named Dr. Tom House,
yep.
who originally started training baseball players and actually professional quarterbacks. And what he had did to try to increase their swing speed was created a system where he had baseballs that weighed lighter than the ball, a normal baseball, and then that were heavier than a baseball.
Yep.
And then what he would do is, you know, there was a very thorough warm-up. Actually, wasn't super complicated. It was a karaoke, basically, yeah. with your arms above your shoulders. But, you know, warm-up's key before doing that because, as you alluded to, that type of training is very, very hard on the body.
Yeah.
We always say you can only swing as fast as you slow down. So, like, you know, on that front, like, I'm getting a little off topic, but we won't even let guys begin speed training mm-hmm. until they're a certain – they check off a few boxes right. in the gym. Right? That stability and strength is so important. And what we've learned about fast twitch muscles just in general, mm. for those guys that have them, just by getting stronger, you're yeah. going to get faster.
Of course.
But anyway, so yeah, there's a series. You start with, you know, there's certain orders. There's still debate today on what the best way to do it is, whether it's start with heavy, end with light, start with light, end with heavy, mm. then end with light. I think there's a combination that probably works the best, depending on who they are as an individual.
Yeah.
But that was the premise, right?
Yeah.
And we won't go too far down the rabbit hole, yeah. but when we had first learned of that, we ended up getting involved with another product,
yeah.
okay, which is probably the premise in the beginning and why in the back of your head, you know, where you're at today starting mm-hmm. your own because yeah. you got a taste of it in the past.
Right.
But yeah, we jumped into the world of overspeed training. Obviously, this product has gained a lot of traction. There's other competitors out there. You mentioned one of them, yep. which was the stack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've used it personally. I mm-hmm. agree. It is extremely violent on the body. I'm first going to be going to the gym to make sure that I'm allocating time just to getting stronger if yeah. I do have time at this point.
Of course.
But yes, I just wanted to share with the audience what overspeed training is. It's ultimately, you're trying to get rid of the governor in your brain
right.
and expose your brain to an object moving faster than what you're typically accustomed right. to. There are some returns that people have had, but it sounds to me you've gotten to the point through your studies, through mm-hmm. your expertise, through your experience, mm-hmm. There's a better way.
Yeah.
And this is where we've come out with your product. Let's give a shout out to the name.
Yeah.
What is it?
HITS, HIITS, High Intensity Impact Training System.
And by the way, he did give me an opportunity to hold one and I'm pretty excited about yeah. it. It's, and I, Tommy and I have talked about it in the past. I'm like, what you need to do is develop a product you can hit something with.
Yeah.
And obviously, we're pursuing Smart Golf with Fitness Instruction. We're growing our business on our own, so yeah. The time allocation wasn't there. Yeah. But it sounds to me like you've got a partner.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah,
you've got a little bit of financial backing. So yep. We're going all in on this.
All in.
And
all
it's going to be an overspeed system mm-hmm. in which you can now hit balls with us.
Yep.
So go ahead and I want to give you the floor so you can talk a little bit more to that.
Yeah, it's super cool. You know, once I was sponsored by Callaway at the time, so I had a bunch of drivers and I was able to really play around with a bunch of different weights and a bunch of different things. And once I got it right, my speed started to go up and I was doing it a couple times a week. And look, if I wanted to hit 225, I got to swing at least 150, 151, right? 1.5 smash, you know, normally it's 148 or 149 smash. So I had to swing 51, 52. So in order for me to hit 225, I needed to get faster. I just kind of plateaued. I didn't really do much. My body was telling me that, you know, this isn't going to work long-term. So when I developed this, I started to get a little faster, a little faster, a little faster over the course of 3 months.
When did you develop this?
2017, 2018.
What I held today has been in the works in the since works. 2017. Mm-hmm. And you hit your max speed in what year?
Well, 2022, September 2022. But I hit 150 for the first time. I gained my fastest in 2017, 2018 was about 145, 146.
So you've been doing overspeed training with contact for 5 years now. Mm-hmm. Got it. Is anyone else doing it?
Not that I know of.
So there's your your competitive advantage
there.
Yeah,
for sure. You know, we're getting a patent. All that stuff is in the works. And I think it's going to be really good. I think it's not for everybody. You know, just like Smart Golf, you guys are committed. You know, all of your clients are committed to you. You're committed to your clients. I think that's what it's not easy. If you want to get better, if you really want to gain speed, if you want to gain sustainable speed, you got to put the work in.
It's no different than trying to get better at this damn game. Yeah. If you want to make a significant change in your pattern, right. It's going to take a ton of work.
Yep.
You know, the 100%. Pros are no exception. Nope. You know, I forget the guy's name, but the guy that shot a 57 on tour earlier this year, pretty janky golf swing. He said he worked on his swing 6 hours a day for roughly 340 days throughout the year. I tell my clients, I'm like, that are 52 years old bitching about their progress within like, you know, 3 or 4 months. And I'm like, I give that as an example. And I said, if you were to only take one lesson a week, right, and worked on it 1 hour, it'd take you 42 and a half years to put as much time as this guy did in a year. Right. But you're right. It's just like with anything.
Yeah.
Coaching speed, I think people need to know, is a skill. It is something that can be trained. Obviously, you know, there's certain windows, which we've talked about in past episodes, where developmentally as we age, depending on what sports we were introduced to, whether it was golf, hockey, baseball, soccer is a good one.
Yep.
You know, if you've hit those windows, your ceiling's going to be higher. Everyone has a ceiling.
Oh, yeah.
But very few people are out there maxing out what their ceiling is, both on speed and potential, right? And if you want to give yourself the best chance at hitting either of those, there's no shortcuts, man.
Yeah, with anything. No shortcuts, man. If it were easy, everyone would do it, right? So,
what age, and maybe it's today, what age do you feel like you were the best shape of your life?
Well, I was in a Gloria Estefan video in 2000. I was in pretty good shape. So probably like from a beach standpoint, probably 99.
No, from a functional standpoint,
I feel pretty damn good now.
Yeah. 53 years old.
215, 215 pounds, 6'4". I move great. I feel awesome. Out of bed.
Have you ran into any major injuries throughout your career?
Well, so no.
Damn.
Except for last August, World Long Drive Tour event. I'd won 4 times before the Tennessee event. It was one of the majors during the season. It was the last one before the World Championships. They made a platform for the practice tee, and they put down this black slippery carpet. And Dr. Joe Lacaz with Rotex was with me. And, you know, I was hitting some 5 irons, and it was kind of slick. And, you know, I should have just listened to myself. And I told Doc, I'm like, Doc, somebody's going to get hurt on this today. I didn't understand what why anyone would put that surface down for us to warm up is beyond me. So I was warming up. I hit some drivers, sliding, slipping a little bit. So I kind of stepped on one a little bit more, got it like maybe 142, 210. And my right foot slipped behind me when I was pushing off. And I tore my adductor longus off my pelvic bone.
Oh, damn.
Didn't know. I thought I just strained it. So I didn't hit any more balls after that. I wrapped it. And then I just figured it was a strain. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to finish warming up in my sets. Because I could just kind of go and cruise through the first one was, you know, it was a round robin to get to the final eight. And I knew I could just go up there and just kind of cruise and still make the final eight at my speed. So went up there. I wound up winning the tournament. The next day, I was really sore. The next week, I started to train. I moved, like if I'd move a certain way, it'd be painful. And I've never felt anything like that. I've had strains before, little strains or whatever, little kind of tweaks. And then the following week, I couldn't even swing at 100 miles an hour. It felt like somebody was stabbing me in the groin. So,
this was what year?
Last year.
Oh, damn.
Yep. Right before the World Championships. And I was, you know, I'd won five, won, played in seven events, made seven finals, won five times. And, you know, favorite to win the World Championship last year and the Open. I mean, I had a good chance of doing really well in the Open division too, which I'd qualified for. And, yeah, it was just unfortunate that, that happened and, you know, went and got an MRI, showed a 20% tear. And I'm like, son of a bitch. So, you know, I tried to, I pulled out of the Open division World Championship. I tried to compete in the senior division. I just couldn't do it, you know, unfortunately, but, you know, a lot of guys, doctors took care of me and surgery went great. And I was back up to 220 ball speed in January.
Fully recovered. November 10th, fully recovered. So you did have to get surgery.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was optional. You know, the doc said, are you going to compete? I said, yeah, I want to compete. He goes, I would say doing what you do, swinging like you swing. If you want to compete more, I would recommend, so it's only like 20, 25 minutes. So we're just going to stitch you back up. Boom. You'd be usually 6 to 8 weeks. You'll recover, you'll be able to hit balls. And then you should have, he told me some stories about some other athletes he did. And lo and behold, here we are with the third belt. So he was right.
That's amazing. Yeah. When did you just won this, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. A week and a half ago.
Congrats.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, what I want to do here is we're going to try to go a little bit more rapid question here.
Yeah.
But so highlight, you've got your third belt.
Third belt.
Okay. I know this isn't like a massive number, but I'm still curious. What's your total prize winnings?
For this one?
For everything.
Oh, God. Probably over the course of my career since 2014.
Long drive, yep.
Say probably $200,000.
Okay.
I would think.
That's pretty
right
good.
Around there. Yeah.
What was your biggest check?
20.
Okay.
20,000 was my biggest check. But here's the thing, though. The cool thing is 2018, 2019, I double dipped in almost every event. I was open and senior. So if I won a senior event, it was $7,500. If I finished top eight, I'd make $3,500, $7,500.
I'm assuming you were the only one doing that.
Well, Jeff Gavin, too. Jeff. You know, Jeff is he's an absolute beast. He's from Canada. He's a little bit bigger than I am. He's won two world championships as well. I've beat him in all three finals. I beat him.
You seem pretty sad about that. Eh?
Yeah, well, I've always rose to the occasion. I think, I love competing against the best. Absolutely. I just relish it. And like we said before, Joe, I want the ball at the end. Even when I was 12 pitching, I wanted the ball.
I think it's just something
you just have that thing in you, right? You want to compete against the best and you want to beat the best and just kind of see where you are. See where you are from a competitive standpoint. And if you come out on top, great.
Okay. How about this? Do you want to give a shout out to some of your sponsorships?
Yeah. Lewis Wellen with Torch Eyewear. Phenomenal. He was with Oakley for years. And then he's been taking really good care of me since 2018. Dr. Joe Lacaz with Rotex. He's phenomenal. Navy SEAL for 22 years. Brilliant. We've collaborated on a lot of stuff, especially my swing. He goes, I've looked at your swing more than I want to admit. But he's like, you know, Navy SEALs that never... It never grows out of him, right? He's just an absolute savage. He's amazing. Rip out 10 pull-ups like it's nothing at 74 years old. So he's very inspiring. Who else? TPT Shafts. out of Switzerland. They've been, you know, they've been phenomenal to me. Great, great shafts. Jason Day plays it. A bunch of tour players play it. Very, very happy with them. And just, you know, everyone that has supported me, even you guys. I mean, I'm so thankful for you guys when I first got into it, because if I didn't have you, yeah, who knows? Who knows what would have happened? I mean, if I didn't have anywhere to come and train and to bounce things off of you guys and allow me to practice in a first-class facility. I mean, to see what you guys have built here is absolutely mind-blowing.
Appreciate
just
that.
Just mind-blowing how successful and how much you and Tommy, just you appreciate. You know the hard work. When you put the work in and then all of a sudden you see the fruits of your labor, it's just, you got to sit back and be like, damn, you know.
100%, man. Yeah. The key, which we discussed earlier,
build something special.
You just can't give up. Plenty of times where we wanted to. But so, all right. So let's move forward here. A few more questions. I've tried to get an answer. You know, obviously every one of our listeners and most people, 99% of golfers want to hit the ball first.
Of course.
I think you've kind of answered this where, just like we say, there are no shortcuts with improving your golf swing. It's about consistency, longevity, commitment, hard work, and a lot of time. Is there, you know, any sort of advice? Because you're coaching speed now, right?
Yeah.
You just did that to some of our members the last couple of days. Much appreciated. And we've got nothing but good feedback from what you were able to do for them.
Yeah.
But is there some advice that you find yourself consistently communicating that maybe our listeners can appreciate or take away that is a must if you're going to have a pursuit of swinging faster?
Yeah, I think loading properly. Loading the body, winding up properly, unwinding properly. And one of the things I've learned when I was 15 years old, you know, the last three fingers of the lead hand, whether, you know, I'm righty, so my last three of my left are super, super strong. I learned that when I was 15 years old. I've been doing this for 38 years. And just from my release standpoint, I'm swinging a longer lever than everyone. What that means is when I get to impact and post-impact, I've got a little bit of ulnar deviation. And that lever, instead of being 46 inches on a play driver, it's 66. So I'm swinging a longer lever, even though, like, I get it all the time, even from tour players. Be like, dude, that doesn't look like it's 137, 138. Like, I'm playing golf and I'm hitting at 370, 380. And they're like, is your TrackMan juiced? I get it all the time. People are like, oh, there's no way.
Yeah, I get that all the time too.
You know, that's cap. There's no way. but that's key. I mean, I'm swinging. I'm just so
strong. Ulnar deviation,
by
the way, is key for pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
And just in the golf swing mechanics in general. I'm not necessarily using that terminology on a regular basis,
but
I am talking about it.
Yes, we can
daily.
Talk about it. Right.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. It's if you're coaching golf and you are not at some capacity teaching ulnar deviation, well, then you are not teaching release correctly.
Right. Yeah. Right.
100%.
Yeah. It's important.
So what I heard there is loading, unloading, proper release technique.
Yep.
How about just from a consistency in your regimen as far as how time allocation towards actual overspeed training, and then maybe a must have focus in the gym, where if you're not allocating time and energy to this part of your body, you are missing a huge piece.
Yeah, the engine, the middle is massive. I do a lot of rotational stuff. You know, you guys have all the toys here with Pure Motion. I use a lot of it, and I don't do a lot of different stuff, but I use a lot of the same thing, but different angles. Right, a lot of rotational stuff. You know, I don't really bench press or squat normally. I'll do Pure Motion squats. I'll do, you know, maybe some hex bar deadlifts is about the heaviest thing I'll do, but I won't. It's not a staple. Stability is obviously very important, but I'd rather move the middle, get the middle super, super strong. My external obliques, my intercostals, and my rib cage, make my rib cage strong. I mean, I've got it down to a science.
Do you still do any left-handed training?
Once in a while, you know, some guys, you know, don't believe in opposite, you know, training, but I'm a huge.
What would be their argument for that?
I don't know. I know Sasho doesn't really agree with making lefty swings.
Okay, but he does believe in training both sides of the body.
Well, of course, which is so that's what I don't understand. Yeah. It's like if I'm gonna let's just say you throw a med ball, right? Throw it righty. you're going to throw it lefty.
Correct.
You know, dominant, non-dominant side. So what I did was back in 17 and 18, 16, 17, 18, when I was training in Florida, you know, I would go through my speed training. Let's just say I hit 80 balls full out, full bore. I would go in the cage. I was a member of the baseball facility. So I would hit ball lefty baseballs off a tee. I'd make 80 swings. So I would kind of even that out. So why wouldn't I want to do that? If I'm making 80 right-handed swings.
Seems logical.
You know, I'm not going to hit it nearly as well with a golf ball lefty. I mean, I could hit a golf ball pretty loud. I could probably swing a golf club 135, 136 lefty. But if I'm making that same, it's kind of the same swing rotationally. If I'm hitting it off a tee, you know. So I did that for probably 3 years. I haven't really done much of that lately.
Just curious. I mean, but I'm still from the school of thought that we've talked about it a couple times now, is you really can only swing as fast as you slow down.
Yeah.
You can slow down.
Yeah.
And that's where the strength comes in. And which side of your body is slowing you down? Well, a lot of it's on the opposite side, yeah. Right? So it's like, if you're not really, really strong there.
Gotta have the brakes, yeah. Man. All gas, no brakes is no good. So we have a saying, you know, you cannot create the force if you cannot support the force. If you can't support it, you're never going to be able to create it. So that's why what you guys do, you kind of bridge the gap between training and golf swing. And that's why people are continuously getting better.
Makes sense. Yep. Have you had the opportunity to spend much time on any of the force plate technology, whether it's Catalyst? And has that been instrumental in any way, shape, or form? Do you remember whether or not you were getting most of your power, you know, linearly, rotationally, or vertically?
Oh, God, that's a good question. Vertically. I'm pushing. So here's the thing. I was on Swing Cat and I was also on Gasp. So Swing Cat, I was, you know, I'm pushing three times more than a tour player out of my right foot in transition.
Three times more than a tour player.
Three times more than a tour player
out of my right foot. 2X your body weight. Is that, educate me here.
Yeah.
Because I, again, I'm not in that world as much anymore.
Yeah.
And we're not using that every day here. But there's kind of like a metric, right? Is it, mm-hmm. is you want to get 2X your
about
body
two,
weight?
Yeah. About two, but out of the, I don't know what it is out of the right foot.
Okay.
Like
when
I'm loading that right, like we talk about winding and winding up, I am really using that right.
So that's where you're three times a tour player.
Yes.
Is you're loading into your
two
trail
and a half
side.
Into my lead side.
Got it.
Early in transition. So I'm about 500 pounds of pressure into my lead side in transition. It was the same thing when I went to see Dr. Rose at TPI and September 2022, and it was the same at AMG.
Now, did any of that tech shed any insight to some areas where there could be more opportunity for efficiency or power generation? Or was it just kind of, hey, I'm already swinging really fast and this is telling me what I'm doing? Or did it actually influence what happened after?
Mm-hmm. No, I think from a golf swing standpoint, I think my sequence is really good. You know, my golf swing is very solid. You know, and to get stronger, to get more for, like Justin James is about as strong as you get swinging a golf club. I mean, the guy's an absolute beast. And he's about 600 pounds of pressure, I think. He's like almost three times his body weight, lead side. And it's absolutely nuts. He's an absolute tank. I always kind of, I bust him. I'm like, hey, let me know when you want my leg workout, I'll give it to you. Just kidding around. But even, you know, I'm about 2.5 into my lead side and pushing out of my right, kind of unwinding it.
So you have a little bit more to go then.
Yeah, I have a little bit more to go. Hey, better with age, man. You know, I'm going to keep doing this till I'm 60, 70, 80 years old. And I think the world is starting to take notice, Joe, what I'm doing.
Oh, they've been noticing for a while. I mean, speaking of that, your Instagram is up to what, 21,000
yeah,
followers 20, now?
Not bad.
You got some
high
profile friends. I see Tiger Woods giving you a shout
out.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Have you had an opportunity to hang out with him? Or
I haven't
have
had
outside
a,
of
I've met him a couple times. He's never like picked my brain or anything, but I know he knows who I am. And
I saw that you were.
I would absolutely spend some time.
Oh, really?
Really? Right. Yeah. Yeah.
How about I saw again? I don't know where you guys are at today, but you were spending some time with Graham. McDowell.
Yeah.
You know, I know he's on the live
friends,
now.
Yeah, friends with Graham, and you know he's such a good dude. I'm grateful for Graham. He helped me get my first start on the Champions Tour out of Pebble and Spyglass.
That's like, what I was curious about.
Talk about, you know, the first time I'd been out there, right, to Pebble and Spyglass is my first PGA Tour Champions event. Like, it doesn't get any better than that, right? So, but yeah, between the first and the second round, it was like night and day. But that was pretty cool.
All right. Well, where are you at today? I see you just won your third, and I'm pretty sure I saw on your status that you're retiring from world long drive competition.
Yeah.
So what does that mean for you now? I know obviously you're doing the speed schools. If you want to speak to that, but what's the goal here? What's the plan?
So going to be doing more coaching and just kind of getting out what I do. And the cool thing is I think, you know, everything that I coach is everything that I've learned through my experience in Dr. Joe Lacaze with the body and how smart he is. And I look at him like he's got three heads sometimes when he talks about the body, and it's just, you know, it's amazing what I've learned about what I do. Like, some of the special things that I do, didn't even know that I did them. But now that I understand it, I can go and coach it. Once you understand something, and you can probably agree with this, when you understand what you're doing, it's much easier to do it. Like, if somebody's telling you to do something, you don't understand it, you're like, oh, okay, well. But if you understand why you're doing it, and there's a process to doing it, I think you're going to get a lot better a lot quicker.
Well, I think on the flip side of that too is when things start to go a little haywire, you have some insight and where to start looking.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
More, you know. So, all right. So you've got you're no longer competing. You're going to be doing the speed schools. Mm-hmm. All right. We know you're still an incredible player. Mm-hmm. You've got an ability that no one else on that senior tour has. Mm-hmm. Where does that kind of sit with kind of your goals to compete still?
Yeah, I would love to play in some more Champions Tour events. Spent some time with Rocco Mediate earlier in the year at a pro-am for the Champions Tour. And, you know, he's watching me hit drivers just, you know, with his cigar in his mouth, just like shaking his head. He's like, stupid. Like, you're stupid. I hate you. Yeah. So, but then I'm hitting little six irons and a little nine irons, like I was talking about Phil. But yeah, I mean, you know, I shot 69 on Friday with Tommy, and I hadn't played that much at White Eagle, and, you know, flushed it pretty much all day. Hit some irons, made an eagle, it was a long eagle putt. It was like 60, 70 feet, but yeah, it just, I'm in such a better headspace now. I think I'm just so much more. And like you said before about expectations, I got caught up watching TV when I was younger, as a young professional, watching these guys making putts from everywhere. So I'd hit it inside 15 feet thinking I had to make it. Like, I'm never going to make it on tour if I don't make this putt. And then all of a sudden, you know, after I stopped playing, and then you really learn that from 8 feet, it's 50-50 on the PGA Tour. You're like,
right.
Okay. So if I knew that back then, you know, it could have been different. I mean, look, I'm not going to change anything, but now I just have a completely different mindset playing golf. You know, if I hit a seven iron to 22 feet, it's a pretty damn good shot. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really good. So if I miss an 8 footer,
take note, listeners.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, but managing your expectations is massive, 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 massive for this game.
Arguably the biggest. Okay. So obviously you do a lot of corporate events, mm-hmm. you know, and that's where you're getting a lot of your main income.
Yeah.
And I just kind of look back at how you went all in on pursuing long drive. Mm-hmm. Is that going to look a little different than how you pursue the senior tour then?
Yeah, I don't know if I'll go back to Q school.
To Monday qualify,
probably
let it come. If it comes, great,
if it comes,
it's not
great.
Okay. So it's not as large of a goal as it was to be the best at world long drive.
No.
Okay.
No, it's, you know, that's, it's going to take a lot of, hits. Golf is going to have to crush it for me, you know? So, I mean, that's, you know, the hope, but, it's, you know, I'm looking forward to playing more and, you know, taking that 10,000 that I, you know, spent at Q school in 2021 and had no status, you know, making the finals. And it's just, I'll probably go pre-Q and Monday Q for a few champions.
Okay.
Maybe get a start here and there.
Fair enough.
You know, some guys want to get me into some events.
You know, selfishly, so. I would love to see you go all in, but I totally get all the sacrifice, hard work, and time commitment that goes into it.
Yeah.
You know, I think knee-jerk reaction, it's easy not to appreciate how good those players still really are.
Most people have no idea how good, even the Champions Tour guys. Yeah. I mean, they're really freaking good.
Yeah.
But you know, I possess something that nobody really does on the planet. And I can, you know, still hit wedges and short game solid and make a few putts and we can be right there.
Love it. I have a question for you. Can you recall the first person to ever call you Fast Daddy? Who gave you that name?
Yeah. One of my coaches in Little League. Yeah.
Oh, so it was from a little kid.
Kids. Okay. Yeah. It was, you know, I threw in the mid 70s as a 12-year-old in Little League. And, you know, Paul Newman and the Hustler movie came out in the 60s. And I grew up in the 70s, early 80s. And, you know, when I was playing baseball, I could fling it.
Love it. Shucks. I thought when you had started working at Catalyst, obviously Fast Eddie's not super original.
But I know. But yeah, it kind of came back people. And I think you were one of the first. Yeah. You kind of brought it back. Yeah. Right. Because I really wasn't even thinking about it. And the name fits.
Oh, 100%. Logo's sick. All right, so what's your handle on Instagram? And I was going to ask, do you do any kind of online coaching or anything of that nature?
I do.
Or potentially going to dabble into that for anyone that might want to look you up?
Yeah, I do. I do online assessments, online swing analysis.
Okay.
You know, with whoever's swing compared to mine, talking about each point.
How can they get in touch with you?
My Instagram, @fasteddy480.
Okay.
And shoot me a message on Instagram and... I'd be glad to do it. It's fun. It's fun for me. I have a little coaching app where I do it, and I'll probably do like 5 or 6 a month.
Oh, nice.
So it's kind of nice. I'm not too crazy busy with it, which is kind of nice because I'm, you know, I've got charity events and corporate events and things like that, and still family. You know, you got to balance it, as you know, with 3 kids. You know, I've got 3. Mine are older than yours, but it is nicer with all 3 of them driving. It's nicer and it's not nicer. So, but
we always conclude the show with giving our listeners a tip, even though, you know, because the name of the podcast is everything but the tip.
But you can
imagine how cheesy some of them are. But if you wanted to give the listeners a tip regarding anything, could be swing speed, could be just being an entrepreneur, could be anything.
Yeah.
What do you got for us?
All right. So if I were to give one bit of advice, a very, very important piece of advice, in order to swing faster, you know, if you're swinging 104 miles an hour, you're never going to swing at 110. In order to swing at 110, we have to get to about 115. So I think when you're practicing, I think people are too locked into ball flight. When, you know, speed training should be exactly that, speed training. Like Hideki Matsuyama, if you go onto my Instagram, you'll see Hideki swinging 191 ball speed. He's probably the only tour player I've ever worked at who actually listened and just said, look, I don't care where it goes. I'm just going to let it rip. And you can't worry about where it goes. I don't care where you hit it on the face. I don't care if you snap hook it, top it, pop it up, whatever. It's about moving it as fast as you can because you have to push the limits. And once you keep raising the ceiling, and I say one of the same things I told Bryson back in 2020 on the tee at Arnold Palmer Invitational, I said, you got to push the limits, man. You got to be reckless. In order to push your body to move the club faster, you have to get out there and actually do it. You know, it's just not going to happen. You have to push it so you continually, consistently, little by little, raise the ceiling, and then the floor will come up with it. And just like, you know, I hit a couple 136, 137, 202 ball speed today, just my play driver. When I first started with you guys, I was 134, 196, mm-hmm. going balls. I mean, I was swinging as hard as I could. Now it's like 134, 196 is like literally chipping a 7-iron. So it's just a culmination of years. But if you're working on swing speed and you're out at the range, don't worry about where it goes. Just if you're speed training, it's 100% speed training. Don't worry about where it goes. Just let it rip. And you know, hopefully you'll just kind of keep climbing the ladder.
Excellent advice. I love it. It's the same. It's honestly no different than when you get introduced to a new movement pattern and that's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And then before you know it, it is comfortable.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with swinging at a lot faster speed. That is uncomfortable
and
the ball's going everywhere. And then all of a sudden it is more comfortable. So I love that. Eddie, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks,
having
man.
You on the show. I love you, man.
Awesome, dude.
So proud of you.
Yeah,
and all
proud
the success
of you too.
You
guys
having.
Are phenomenal. Love you guys.
All right. Well, stay in touch.
Yeah.
I look forward to getting this episode launched. And cheers, man.
Awesome, man.
All right. Peace.
Thanks, pal.
A big thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Everything But the Tip podcast. Stay connected with us on all social media platforms by following at Smart Golf Fitness. For additional episodes, updates, and exclusive content, check out our website at smartgolffitness.com. Don't forget to show some love, like, share, and subscribe to ensure you never miss out on the latest insights and engaging discussions. Your support means the world to us. Until next time, keep swinging and stay fit.